No one whole wanted to be hurt, wanted to be the victim of such cruelty as held her now. Her fears were as common as a taste for salt or honey, as healthy as the desire for comfort, for love. So much she had learned from the Kwokkin. Now, at last, she accepted her right to share those fears. She did not have to deny them, only master herself. And this, she saw, her dream had done. She had built against that fear a vision of power not wholly selfish, power to protect not only herself, but others. And that vision, however partial it had been in those days, was worth following. For it led not away from the fear, as a dream of rule might do, but back into it. The pattern of her life, as she saw it then, clear and far away and painted in bright colors, the pattern of her life was like an intricate song, or the way the Kwokkin talked of the grove's interlacing trees. There below were the dream's roots, tangled in fear and despair, nourished in the death of friends, the bones of the strong, the blood of the living. And there high above were the dream's images, bright in the sun like banners or the flowering trees of spring. And to be that banner, or that flowering branch, meant being nourished by the same fears, meant encompassing them, not rejecting them. She did not know herself when these thoughts linked at last, forming the final pattern, bringing up into her mind the self she had become. It was then as if several selves were present, mysteriously separate and conjoined. Trapped inside her body was the same child she had been, feeling each new torment as a wave of intolerable pain, each ragged scream as a fresh humiliation. The seasoned soldier watched with pity as her body gave way to exhaustion and pain, as any body would, feeling no shame at the sight or sound or smell of it. For this was something that could happen to anyone, and she had never inflicted it on others. And someone else, someone newer, refused the soldier's tactics of defiance, anger, vengeance, and looked into her own fear to find the link to those around her, to find the way to reach those frightened tormentors, the ones not already lost to evil. In the rare respites, when the priests stopped to harangue the crowd and revive her for more torture, she felt curiously untroubled, not free of pain, nor free of fear, but free of the need to react to that fear in all the old ways. She had no anger left, no hatred, no desire for vengeance, nothing but pity for those who must find such vile amusements, who had no better hope or no courage to withdraw. It would all happen to her. All the things she'd feared, every violation of body, everything she'd taken up the sword to prevent. And she consented. Not because it was right, it was never right, not because she deserved it, no one deserved such violation, but because she could consent, being what she was, and by consenting destroy its power over her and others, proving in her own body that fear's power came from fear, that greater power could from the same dark roots find another way to the light. This quietness, this consent, formed a still pool in the center of that violent place. At first, only the priests noticed and flung themselves into a frenzy of violence against it, but it was not brittle steel to break or crystal to shatter, but a strength fluid and yet immovable, unmarred by the broken rhythm of her breath or even by her screams. The quietness spread, from gray eyes that held no hatred for those who spat at her face or tasted her blood, from a voice that could scream in pain.